Welcome to PATC Behind the Badge podcast, Uncut with Mike Heisinger. Today's guest we have is Randy Sutton, Lieutenant with Las Vegas Metro, retired. Randy, give us a little rundown of who you are, where you've been, what you've done.
All right, you got any time for that?
Oh, yeah. Bring it on.
Okay. So I spent 34 years as a cop. I did 10 years in the small town of Princeton, New Jersey, my hometown where I grew up and became a cop at the ripe old age of 19.
Oh, wow.
And did 10 years there, 6 years as a patrolman and 4 years as a detective. And yes, we were called patrolmen back then.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. It actually said it on the badge. And then I got bored to death working at a small agency and decided to move on and wound up at the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department, where I was not bored, and did 24 years, almost 24 years there, retiring at the rank of field lieutenant.
Oh, wow. Right on. Very cool. So 24 years at Las Vegas Metro. That's got to be fun.
It was a great, career, man. It was, I mean, 34 years, that's a pretty good run.
Yeah.
It ended abruptly. I did not expect my career to end, and that's part of my story.
Okay.
But I certainly did not expect to end the way it did. But along the way, I've done a bunch of other things. I've written 4 books. I actually have a 5th one coming out in about a month called Rescuing 911, The Fight for America's Safety. I was one of the most featured officers on the TV show Cops, and been in movies. I was in the movie Casino with Robert De Niro and Martin Stewart and Sharon Stone.
Yeah.
I was in the movie Fools Rush In with Salma Hayek.
Yeah.
And a few others along the way. And I've been doing, I'm a national commentator on law enforcement topics to the national media.
Oh, very cool. That's awesome.
But most importantly, I am the founder and chairman of the board of the Wounded Blue.
That's where I was going.
Is the national assistance and support organization for injured and disabled law enforcement officers, a nationwide charity that's helped thousands of police officers around this country deal with physical and emotional injuries.
Heck yeah, that's where I was going. I heard about Wounded Blue when I was in Vegas at the K-9 conference when you spoke. And I don't know if you remember that or not, but I was just like, holy crap, there's something out here for us. So I was hit by it. I was like, okay, I need to do something with this. And with PATC, the Public Agency Training Council, I know you're familiar with them for training and that kind of stuff. I teach nationwide, and I teach 4 different topics. For them, I teach the FTO certification, supervising and managing the FTO unit, FTO leadership, and response to active shooter and terrorism. Each one of my classes, I always talk about the Wounded Blue. I put your website up on the screen and tell everybody, hey, if you've got anybody, you need to have them talk to these guys. So,
well, and I appreciate that because actually, you know, everybody thinks that the law enforcement community is a very small knit community. It's not, literally 18,000 different police agencies, and it's very difficult to get the word out that we're even here. You know, there's a lot of officers in need, and they don't know that help exists. So anytime we can get the word out about our organization, I'm pleased as punch to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. As soon as I found out I was taking over this podcast, I was like, okay, I need to talk to Randy. I need to get Randy on here so we can talk about Wounded Blue and talk about his experiences with PATC and that kind of stuff. So being that you're familiar with him, you were out there and everything else. In fact, I'll be out there in April in Vegas for their conference. That's at the Flamingo. So that'll be fun.
Right, yeah. No, I have a long history of the PATC. One of the jobs that I had with Las Vegas Metro was director of advanced training.
Okay.
So So I was working closely with all kinds of different law enforcement instructors around the country, and PATC has, of course, had a very long and illustrious history training law enforcement, and they've been around Vegas for years.
Right. Yes, sir. So tell me with the Wounded Blue, what year did it form? What year did you bring it about?
We went operational about 5 years ago. In fact, during National Police Week, 5 years ago is when we actually launched. So we are finishing our 5th year. We'll be beginning our 6th year in May. And during that time, we've helped more than 14,000 American law enforcement officers. That's a
wow.
That's an amazing number.
Yeah, that's huge.
And some of these officers, all they need is someone to talk to. They need an ear, because when you get injured in the line of duty, whether those injuries are physically or emotional, you really feel like you're by yourself. You feel alone. You feel forgotten. And you feel abandoned in many cases. So our motto is never forgotten, never alone. We take that motto very seriously. My entire team is made up of cops who have been shot, stabbed, beaten, run over, screwed up, screwed over, and faced serious physical and emotional injuries. I mean, I have cops in wheelchairs, cops who've been blinded, cops who've been paralyzed. And they continue to serve. They're the real heroes of the Wounded Blue. These are the men and women who, despite their injuries, despite the challenges that they face, continue to serve their brothers and sisters. And that is the very epitome of service, if you ask me.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, sir. I completely and wholeheartedly agree with you there. So how did, being as 5 years old, how did it come about? What brought you to making the Wounded Blue?
Well, it's how my career ended.
Okay.
Like I told you, I as a 24-year veteran, I spent most of my career working street assignments. Not all of it, but most of it. And I because I love the street. And when I got promoted to lieutenant, which is the last rank that you in Las Vegas where you can actually, you know, do road work and push a black and white, even though you're as a supervisor. That's the last rank that I ever tested for, because I'm not the guy that sits behind the desk.
Right.
So I spent my entire lieutenant's career on graveyard shift, because in Vegas, that's where the action is. And I loved it. I loved working with energetic young men and women who were dedicated to policing, dedicated to the Metropolitan Police. I thought it would go on for a lot longer than it did. But one night, 2:30 in the morning, I was watch commander. Whenever I was watch commander, I would take a young officer with me so I could get to know my people.
Yeah.
Because I had a lot of cops working with me, you know. And we're riding around down the famous Las Vegas Boulevard, right in front of Bally's Hotel Casino. And I was talking to him like I'm talking to you. And suddenly I found my brain slowing down, literally. And I started talking slower. And I knew what was happening. I was actually cognizant and aware that my brain was slowing down. I was having a stroke.
Wow.
So I stopped the police car right in the middle of the street and told him, I said, get me medical. I'm having a stroke. And the poor kid's looking at me like, really?
You know, if it was a test or you were playing.
Yeah.
Is
this a test? And got out of the police car to go around to the passenger side in case he needed to get me to the hospital, and started speaking gibberish. And I knew I was speaking gibberish, but I couldn't control it. And then I lost the ability to speak altogether in the move.
Wow.
And crumpled to the pavement and lay there helpless. Completely helpless, aware of everything that was going on around me, but unable to say anything or do anything or move. And I got to tell you, I wasn't afraid of dying.
Yeah.
I was actually praying to die, because I didn't want to live like that.
Yeah.
And it was the most frightening moment of my life.
Oh, absolutely.
And I've had some frightening moments, I can assure you. They got me to the hospital. And once again, that angel that's been on my shoulder my entire career was with me again. And the clot went through my brain, did its damage, but it could have been far worse than it was.
Yeah.
But it ended my police career.
Wow.
And what happened next was shocking to me. And that was that my own department turned its back on me and said, we're not paying your medical bills and we're not giving you your benefits.
It was on duty. It's on duty injury, regardless of what it is.
And I see, what are you talking about? You have to. It's the law.
Yeah.
It's written into the statute. I said, yeah, we'll make us.
Oh, wow.
And I was waiting. What? I went to go see the sheriff who I served with for 24 years, who I was friendly with. And I said, how do you treat me like this?
Right.
He looked me right in the eye and said, Randy, this isn't personal, man. It's just business. And I came to find out that he was telling me the truth. I see, I was no longer of need. I was no longer of service.
Yeah.
To the department. I was now a liability. So they fought me. I had to get an attorney. I had to go through well over a year of hearings. They spent tens of thousands of dollars to fight me, knowing they were legally obligated to pay my medical bills and give me my benefits.
Right.
And eventually I won. It took over a year. And the reality is this. They were fighting me because they were playing the actuarial game. They thought if they could push this out long enough, then maybe I would die in the meantime.
Oh, my gosh.
And that's a harsh reality to face.
Yeah.
You know, when you given your all to your agency and, you know, we were brought up to believe that we're all the thin blue line.
Right.
That we're part of your blue family. Yeah. Uh-huh. it can be a very dysfunctional family sometimes.
Sometimes, yes, it can be.
And so it was a bitter lesson to learn. But I thought it was just me. And then because of being on the TV show Cops and writing books and being a police instructor for decades, cops started reaching out to me with similar stories. Randy, I know you don't know me, but I was shot. My chief never even visited me in the hospital. They're not paying my medical bills. Randy, I know you don't know me, but I was hit by a drunk driver in my police car. I'm paralyzed below my waist, and they've thrown me away. One after another from all over the country. And I realized, oh my God, wait a minute. This is a national issue. So yeah. I said, there's got to be resources to these men and women. Because if you die in the line of duty, there's all kinds of resources.
There's benefits, there's family benefits.
There's Concerns of Police Survivors, a fantastic organization. And I looked around for resources, these men and women, and there weren't any. So I created it. We are the Wounded Blue, and we are that resource, and we've helped thousands of cops across the country.
That's awesome. That's badass. I really like it. So, yeah. Man, that's powerful, what you went through and how it all came about and everything else. I didn't know the story behind it. I just knew that Wounded Blue was out there to help. So that's amazing.
And you think that, you know, 3 weeks before I had the stroke, my mother died in my arms.
Oh, my gosh.
2 months before that, I was in a fatal shooting.
Wow.
Not my first, by the way.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot going on. There was a lot of stress. But then they found out I had a severe heart condition that I didn't know about. And as you know, cops have a predilection for, you know, heart problems because of everything that we see and do. So when they released me from the hospital, the doctor said to me, how are you feeling? And I said, tell you the truth, I feel pretty good. And he said, I'm glad to hear that, Randy, but I don't want you to be under the misconception that any time, anything we did here is going to preclude you from walking out of here and having a heart attack or a stroke.
Wow.
And I went, what? I didn't expect that. And he said, yeah, you need to prepare yourself for your own mortality. And that weighed very heavily.
Yeah.
You know, you know, I had just experienced the worst loss in my life. I lost my family. I lost my job.
Yeah.
My own brethren turned against me is the way I viewed it. And it was a very dark time, man. Very lonely, dark time. And, you know, I know that post-traumatic stress is a real, you know, issue. And can be as real as a bullet.
Absolutely.
And so, but if I hadn't experienced that, the Wounded Blue would never have been born.
Right.
So we're given a mission sometimes.
Yep.
You know, we're a pathway is open to us. We just need to listen to our hearts and our minds and whoever is actually running the game up there. Right. And go with the pathway that we're given.
Absolutely. Yes, sir. I completely and totally agree with that. So with the Wounded Blue, you guys do a lot for law enforcement. I know one of the guys that I used to work with in Indiana, in Johnson County, Indiana. You guys helped him out when he got in a head-on collision. I saw that he was talking about it on Facebook and everything, so I thought that was really cool. So it, you know, impacted somebody that I knew. You guys have helped me. You got me with a mentor, that kind of stuff, to kind of talk things through and get working and everything else, which I'm still moving that way and still working with it. And I'd like to talk to you more about that later on, a different time, different place.
Sure. So, absolutely. And, you know, I'm really proud of what we have created. And also, you know, I want to bring attention to our National Law Enforcement Survival Summit, which will be held this September in Las Vegas. It's our fifth annual National Law Enforcement Survival Summit. And this is, you know, when you talk about training, this is our most important training experience.
What are the dates on that?
September 22nd through the 25th, I believe. It's on our website, woundedblue.org. And this is our fifth annual one. Literally, this is so powerful, Keith. We've actually had people stand up and say, if it weren't for this conference, I was going to kill myself.
Wow.
That's how powerful it is. I wish, if I could wave my magic wand, I would have every police officer in America attend this.
Yeah.
Because it will open their eyes in ways that they never would have expected. Because you never know. We have to be prepared for the things we see, the things we do, the things we experience as a police officer, so we don't fall into that darkness, which many of us are really familiar with.
Absolutely. Yes, sir. With my years of experience, I don't have as many as you, but 20 years of experience and 15 of that being SWAT, dealt with a lot and crash reconstructions, yeah, everything else. So I put a lot out there and seen a lot. Being investigations, right, you know, all that good stuff. So, yeah, I know where you're coming from. I know where a lot of these guys are coming from that are going to the conference and reaching out and that kind of stuff. That's why I push it so hard in my classes. Every time I talk about it, hey, you need to reach out to Wounded Blue. So,
yeah, I appreciate that, Mike. It's really important that, you know, because there's a ton of training out there, right?
Yes, sir.
Some of it's great. Some of it sucks. But now, for the first time in policing, in just the last few years, we're actually seeing training about this topic.
Right.
I mean, you remember when you started, if you had an issue with some emotional stuff going on because of what you saw, it was, you better suck it up, Buttercup, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Compartmentalize that stuff, right? Stuff your emotions, get rid of it. All right.
So when, you know, policing has evolved in a lot of different ways, sometimes not for the best. Yeah. There's things that I wish policing didn't go into certain areas. But one of the things that we have done, and I'm very satisfied that we're on a good trajectory now of accepting the fact that we're not Superman.
Right.
That we have feelings. Thank God we do.
Yeah.
Because when we shut those feelings down, we lose our effectiveness as a cop.
Yeah, and it damages relationship with the community. It damages, yeah, relationship with your own department, with your own family. So
exactly. So I think we're seeing at least the light at the end of the tunnel that we're recognizing that post-traumatic stress is real. You know, there's still states that don't even recognize it.
Oh, my gosh.
There's states that if you say you have PTS, they say it doesn't exist. Prove it.
Okay.
Yeah.
How many psychologists do you want in one room?
Right, right, right. But then even those that say, yeah, okay, well, we recognize that it exists, but it doesn't exist to the point where it can you know, make you ineffective as a cop. Well, yeah, it sure as hell can.
Right.
You can literally lose your career over it.
Yeah.
And until it's completely recognized by all workers' comp systems, we're still going to see guys who are thrown away.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things, well, So I ended my career here in New Mexico as the chief of police in Tularosa, which if you watch Billy the Kid movies, that kind of stuff, guy says, hey, it's me, Charlie from Tularosa. That's where I worked. I was the chief over there. Pretty cool spot, and I had a great time over there. But when I ended my career over there, I was talking with a psychiatrist and, you know, getting some things fixed and worked about and everything else. And she asked me, she goes, are you wanting to get retired, you know, from law enforcement based off of mental health? And I was like, what does that involve? And she said, you can't carry a gun anymore. No, I'm sorry.
That would be no.
Yeah. I mean, some guys, there's some folks, there's that push, that understanding of, you know, maybe that's the way they need to go, you know?
Well, but, I mean, listen, there's unfortunately, there are people that have experienced so much trauma that it does become post-traumatic stress disorder.
Right.
See, I shy away from that word.
Yeah.
I view post-traumatic stress injury as the most recognizable of what we see. And like any other injury, it can be fixed.
Right.
It doesn't have to become a disorder. But there are times when it has, when, you know, there's, when you there are guys I know who just literally cannot cope with the outside world.
Yeah.
And so it's debilitated them.
Yeah, absolutely. So if somebody reaches out, one of the officers reaches out, or they can't reach out for themselves, or are his family members or coworkers able to reach out to help this person? That kind of thing. How does that all work?
That's great. I'm glad you brought that up, because I would have to say that about 80% of the people that we talked to were referred by a coworker.
Okay.
Somebody, their partner, their friend, a family member. And one of the things that we are very good at is reaching out, you know, getting, hey, you know what? It's my partner. I know he's struggling with some stuff. He doesn't want to talk to me. And we'll say, listen, just tell him the Wounded Blue is going to give him a call.
Yeah.
And we'll reach out. We can't force him, of course, but let him know that we are here. Let him know that we exist, that we only, our only purpose, we're all volunteers, every single one of us.
Right.
You know, we don't get paid for this. We do this because we love the people who serve in our law enforcement family. See, we really are the Thin Blue Line family.
There you go. Yeah, absolutely.
And so most of the time we can get people to open up to us. And then we have a ton of resources. We have a ton of resources to get people into treatment. Sometimes all they need is somebody to talk to.
Right.
Other times they need more. They need a psychologist. Sometimes they need other kinds of treatment, like for addiction.
Right.
And we help make that happen. We're confidential. The only alliances that we have is with the people that we serve. So we're literally, Mike, a resource for every cop in America and every police agency in America, too.
Yeah.
Because we will often come out to a small agency that doesn't have peer support, that doesn't have the resources. And if a chief or an administrator asks for us, we'll be there.
Yeah.
We'll be there.
That's awesome. That's a beautiful thing. Cause with Tularosa, it was 7 officers, which included me. So small agency, small area,
right?
But a lot of crap. So,
and here's the thing with small agencies, there, you can't even have a peer support team,
right?
Because they're your coworkers. You know everything in the past of that guy that you're riding with.
Yeah.
You know when he cheated on his wife. You know when he did this. You know when he did that. It's impossible to do peer support for somebody that you're that close to.
Right.
So that's why what we do is so important. We're independent.
Yeah. That's very cool. So you guys do anything with the CIT program at all?
CIT is more of a, I think probably almost everybody on the team has gone through CIT training at one point or another.
Yeah.
But that's more for the external stuff.
Right.
Every one of us is trained and certified in peer support.
Okay.
So it's not, we don't just, hey, Joe off the street, you're now a peer support team officer. No,
right.
you have to go through very intensive training and become certified in order to do this. Just not on one-on-one counseling and also group counseling.
Okay. All right. Very cool. So I'm getting into the training and education part of the Wounded Blue. You guys, I know you teach classes and that kind of stuff. You have somebody else that's an instructor as well, correct?
Yeah. The director of training for the Wounded Blue is Bob Bemis. Bob is a retired Pennsylvania state trooper, a sergeant with, he ended his career at the police academy. He ran Pennsylvania State Police Academy.
Oh, wow.
A former Marine and stellar cop, was severely injured in the line of duty. He was working at the police academy. Tremendous athlete, big into jiu-jitsu, running marathons. I mean, you know,
yeah,
state police,
a specimen,
trooper. Yeah. Hey, trooper, right?
Right.
former Marine, trooper. Okay, yeah. I got it. Right.
Right.
All right. So he's leaving the academy one day in his unmarked police car. And as he's driving home, he sees a car smoking on the side of the road. So he's not a road trooper, right? He doesn't have to stop.
Right.
But he does because he's a cop. Yep. And he wants to render aid. And as he gets out of his car and walks around, his police car gets smashed in the back end.
Oh, my gosh.
By a truck. And he got run over by his own police car.
Man.
Devastating injuries. They didn't think he was going to make it.
Yeah.
Probably if he had not been in such incredible physical shape, he probably wouldn't have made it.
Right.
And the funny thing is, his life was saved by an off-duty cop who happened to be driving by.
Oh, my gosh.
And he survived. But, I mean, we're talking devastating injuries. Paralyzed below the knees, blind in one eye.
Man.
He still has asphalt in his head.
Oh, my gosh.
And survived it miraculously. Not only did he survive it, he went back to work.
What?
And finished his career.
So, literally, you say the man, the myth, the legend. Bob,
yeah.
Bemis.
That's right. Exactly. And he could have taken the disability.
Yeah.
He could have, but as a source of pride, he says, I walked in that police academy 25 years ago. I'm walking out.
There you go.
And the day that he walked out, he threw his crutches and balancing on the braces on his legs, he walked out on his own steam. I've seen the video.
Oh,
wow. Oh, his story
is
amazing.
Awesome.
The story is amazing. He's an amazing man. I'm so proud that he's the director of our training bureau. And so we teach a course called Walking with the Wounded.
Okay.
And it's designed for law enforcement personnel and supervisors and administrators to kind of let them know, you know, many of these agencies have never had a cop severely injured in the line of duty.
Right.
It's never happened. They don't know. They're not prepared for it. And they're not bad people.
They just don't know
what to do because they're not prepared for it. So we try to get them to prepare for it. Like, for instance, one of the things that I talk about is when you get in trouble on the department, right?
You call the carpet.
You get suspended. What do they call that?
They get called to the carpet.
Administrative leave, right?
Yeah.
You get put on admin leave during the investigation when you get in a jam.
Right. Yeah.
Well, when you shoot somebody
in the
line of duty, what do they do with you?
Admin leave. Yep.
Why should a person who has gone through the trauma of taking a human life or being in a shooting be labeled in the same way as someone who gets in a jam?
Right.
So one of the things that we talk about is called critical incident leave.
That's awesome.
Don't don't put that on them, that admin leave nonsense.
Yeah, rename it.
And it's not because they're doing it because they're bad leaders.
Yeah.
It's because no one's ever even brought it up to them before.
That's because the worst thing in law enforcement, that's the way we've always done it.
That's the way we've always done it, exactly.
Yeah.
And believe me, I've had chiefs tell me right away, even when I tell them this is what you should do, they don't listen to me. They just do it the way they want to anyway.
Right.
Because they don't give a damn. And there's plenty of chiefs that don't give a damn.
Yeah, it sucks.
So, but we try to, that's one of the things the Wounded Blue does. If you read our mission statement, is to improve the lives of injured and disabled officers through support, education, assistance, and legislation.
Let's talk about legislation.
And that's something where we've been a little successful, but not anywhere near where we need to be, because the laws need to be changed.
Absolutely.
The laws are written to enrich insurance companies.
Yeah.
For workers' comp.
Yep. Absolutely.
It's literally organized crime in many cases.
Yeah, I mean, and you look at it, you RICO Act everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's our mission. And I mean, we've done some amazing stuff. I'll tell you a story just that this week. So Christmas time, just a couple months ago.
Yeah.
One of the things the Wounded Blue does is we have Wounded Blue Christmas campaign.
Okay.
So you've been injured in line of duty. What very few people understand is you go back to base pay.
Yeah.
So you're not working any overtime jobs.
Yep.
You're not putting in any overtime. And now your family is suffering financially because of it.
Yep.
Well, we identify families in need. And we make sure they have enough money for Christmas presents for their kids.
That's awesome.
$500, $1,000, whatever we need, depending on the size of the family. So this year we made a bunch of families. We gave away Christmas to a bunch of affected families.
That's awesome.
And I tell you, I love playing Santa Claus.
Yeah.
That's my favorite. That's my favorite role.
You got a blue suit or a red suit?
Yeah. So this year, I was reading about, and I've been following this case since it began, in Ferguson, Missouri, where much of this insanity started years ago with the shooting of Michael Brown. That began, you know, the downward spiral of law enforcement in the media and by the political left. So it was the 10th anniversary of Michael Brown's death. This is last August. So the usual idiots came out to play and started protesting.
Yeah.
Even though there was nothing to protest, but they wanted to anyway. So there was a police officer from Ferguson named Travis Brown, no relation, and he was there monitoring the crowd. This guy comes out of the crowd, tackles him for no reason. He hits his head and suffers a traumatic brain injury.
Wow.
Goes into a coma. He's been in a coma for 3 months.
Oh, my gosh.
Has two young children. His mom's taking care of his kids. And I've been monitoring his progress. And he started showing, he came out of the coma, and they moved him to a rehab facility to try and learn his life over again.
Yeah.
So I decided we're going to give this family, you know, they're suffering. So I'm going to give this family $1,000 for Christmas gifts.
Man, that's
awesome. So I contact Ferguson PD, talk to the representative of the family, and I said, I'm flying down to give you this money.
Yeah.
So I fly, I'm getting ready to fly to Ferguson, and one of my donors calls me and he asks me what's going on. I said, well, here's what's going on. I'm actually going down to Ferguson. I told him the story. He says, well, Randy, you're not giving him $1,000. I said, I'm not. He said, nope, you're giving him $5,000.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
And he sent me the money. So I'm thrilled now. I'm going to give this family $5,000, right?
Right.
So they have it all set up for me to give the check to the representative of the family, talk about, you know, this nice young officer who's literally, we don't even know what his prognosis is going to be.
Yeah.
And this is a very close-knit community, Ferguson. It gets a bad rap because of where it is. You know, it's in St. Louis County.
Oh, yeah.
And it's
saddest
year. But, so on the way to give them this check, this donor calls me. And he says, Randy, I've been thinking. He says, $5,000 will not change this family's life. He said, but $5,000 a month for the next year will.
Oh, my gosh.
And that's what we did. So every month,
wow,
I send them $5,000. Because, listen, the family's got to pay for hotels because he's in a rehab facility in Atlanta. Workers' comp isn't paying for that.
No, they're not going to pay for
They're not paying for the transportation.
Nope.
They're not paying for clothes for the kids. So that's the Wounded Blue.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's who we are. That's what we do. And the more I can develop donors like this angel that I have, the more law enforcement lives I can touch.
Right.
And so, you know, anybody that's listening to this that wants to support an organization like mine, go to thewoundedblue.org and donate what you can. If you're a business owner and you want to play a bigger role, then you contact me, Randy, at thewoundedblue.org.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. If anybody that wants to do that, for sure, do that. I wholeheartedly believe because of the fact that I was sitting there thinking the entire time, my entire career, you know, who am I supposed to talk to? If I talk to somebody, I might get fired. I'll be shunned.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. Whatever else. And my entire career, I thought that. And I retired, went to the canine conference. I was up there helping out American Aluminum Canine. And I decided I'm going to go in here and sit in this thing because the SEAL that was talking, he was talking about the different stuff with
Johnny Sotelo.
Yes, sir. Johnny.
Great guy. Great guy.
Yep. I was listening to, I was like, I'm going to go in here and listen to Johnny. And went in and sat down and listened. I didn't know you were going to speak. And you got up and spoke. And I was like, okay, I got to go talk to him right now. Yeah. So that was, it's completely and totally, it caught me off guard. It's awesome. This is an organization that I put everything behind. I have since I heard about it. So, and I'm going to continue doing that. One thing we did have a conversation on the phone when you were in New York, about the legislative stuff for possibly getting a VA started, basically of some sort for law enforcement, for first responders, that kind of stuff.
I am trying to become more politically
connected.
Keyed in.
Yeah.
You know, Donald Trump is a huge supporter of law enforcement. If there's any time that we might be able to put something together to protect the men and women of law enforcement, it's now.
Absolutely.
So I am trying to make connections at those levels. I haven't been successful yet, even though I was a speaker at the Republican National Convention,
wow.
Which, yeah, and have met President Trump. He's not on my Rolodex, unfortunately.
Right.
You know, but I fully believe that if I were able to get in front of him, he would say, I support this. Let's put a team together. And that's my goal. That's my goal. I'm actively seeking connections to get in front of the right people.
Right. And anything I can do to help, I will help.
Call President Trump for me.
Yeah, I don't have his phone number. Let me see if I got it in the Rolodex. I've got some other links into some political spots in Washington. So I'm going to see if I can't reach out to them and see what they can do for getting us in contact with different people to try to push us along and help it along. So anything I can do to help it, I'm in.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you need to come out to the Survival Summit in September.
I'm going to try to. We're moving. I don't know what my class schedule looks like during that time because I'm not scheduled out that far yet for PATC. But if I'm available, I'm most definitely going to come out to it. I'll probably bring my wife with me if you're cool with that.
Oh, no. We actually provide spousal support too.
Okay.
And so this summit is designed for people to bring their spouses.
Okay. Very cool. So what kind of, bringing that up, what kind of spousal support is there out there for them during, through Wounded Blue?
Well, that's what we do. We have a part of our trained team are the spouses of injured and disabled cops who've gone through the same training.
Awesome.
They're certified. And because, listen, let's face it, man, those are unique positions.
Yeah.
You know, you're a cop that gets hurt. Who's hurting with you? It's the person that you love.
Right.
And there's never been anything for them. Well, there is now.
Yeah.
It's the Wounded Blue spousal support.
Wow. That's awesome. Yeah. That's, I didn't know that that was there as well. So that's something else. If a state officer that's been through your program, that kind of stuff, or that hasn't been through the program, but wants to help out, what training do, where do they need to start to become a mentor, to come out and be part of the Wounded Blue, the peer support?
So they contact us. We have a contact form on our website, and almost everybody on the team has been injured significantly in one way or another. But we also have people who just want to help.
Yeah.
And so we have volunteers that help out in different ways. We have like our ambassadors that you know, go out and talk about the Wounded Blue and help us find donors, help us, you know, like with different companies that become sponsors,
right,
of the summit or of the Wounded Blue. You know, they know somebody because they feel passionate about the cause,
right?
So, you know, or you know, get trained as a peer support team officer. We train a couple times a year. It's very intense. And then we put you in, you know, you get in the mix.
Very cool. I know one of the things that I was getting help with, and, you know, my mentor was helping me with, it was going to a retreat, like SaveAWarrior.com, Warrior Up, mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. And we talked about quite a few of those. I reached out. I got in contact with them. Wasn't able to make the connection because of class schedule and that kind of stuff, but I still want to go and do that. So that's something.
That's one of the things. We have connections to a lot of groups.
Yeah.
That do, you know, that, because listen, no one charity can do it all.
Right.
Right. Yep. So working with other charities is critical. With other, not only charities, but I mean, like when it comes down to getting people into treatment, those aren't charities. So, you know, those are expensive propositions,
right?
But we help get people scholarshiped. We help getting people into, you know, linked up with another organization. For instance, we work very well with the Gary Sinise Foundation.
Okay.
You know, they have a lot of money and they'll provide some funding for things that we just don't have the resources for.
Yeah.
So, in fact, we rebuilt an officer's home with the Sinise Foundation.
Oh, wow.
And this officer had lost his leg. The Wounded Blue gave him a brand new $117,000 prosthetic leg.
Wow.
Because his own department threw him away.
That's crazy. Is he still serving? Is he?
No. No. Couldn't. He was so badly injured. But what they did, get this, man. This guy's got 10 and a half months on the job. Always wanted to be a cop. Gets hired by a department down in Texas. He's directing traffic in an intersection. A guy high on cocaine driving a tractor trailer is hauling ass towards him. He hits one car, kills that driver,
wow.
And then the tractor trailer tips over and falls on our officer.
Oh, my gosh.
And drags him 100 yards down the road, crushes him. Devastating injuries, traumatic brain injury. Broke all his bones. Had to take his leg off.
Wow.
And what do? He's in a coma for 3 months. He wakes up, they put a medal around his neck and said, "You're fired."
Wow. That's
no medical nuts. Benefits, no pension.
Why?
You're fired.
And medical retirement. And do they not have medical retirement
nothing,
in Texas?
Nothing. Nothing. Gave him nothing.
Wow.
So if you think that story can't get any worse, let me tell you. So he's got a wife and a baby. He goes to get an attorney. Attorney says the only place you're going to get any money is if we sue the tractor trailer company. So they do. But the tractor trailer company only has $1.5 million in insurance. Wow. They killed one driver, and they got $1.1 million, leaving about $350,000 for Mike. They award him the money. Workers' comp comes in and says, we paid $250,000 to fix you. Give it back.
What?
Left him with $100,000, and his wife divorced him and took the rest of the money.
Wow. Holy crap, that's crazy.
And he went home to live with his mom and dad up in Salt Lake, Utah. And then his leg wore out, and they wouldn't give him a new one. And the Fraternal Order of Police up in Utah contacted us. And we wound up putting the resources together to give him a brand new top-of-the-line prosthetic leg. And then helped. Well, we didn't just help. We rebuilt his entire home for him and his now two special needs children.
Wow. That's awesome. That's very, very cool.
You can see all of these stories. We have a YouTube channel.
Okay.
Called Wounded Blue TV. And a bunch of our stuff is up there.
Okay. Yeah.
And then we also have a full-length documentary film.
Okay.
On Amazon.com called The Wounded Blue. It's you'll lose your mind. You go, wait a minute. They can't do that.
Yeah.
It's really eye opening, man.
Yeah. I'm gonna have to get on there and look at that and start watching some videos. I'll start showing them some of those videos in class as well on breaks.
Yeah. That would be great. And our film was directed and produced by Jason Harney, who was a retired sergeant with the Las Vegas Metro. And a very talented award-winning film producer and director.
Okay.
And he's an amazing guy. He's done several films, and all of them designed to help law enforcement.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm going to have to get on there and check that out. And is he going to be at the summit? I'd like to meet him as well.
He usually is.
Okay, very cool.
I can hook you guys up because he's a great resource. He'd be a great resource for you. He wasn't a sergeant at the Metro Academy too. So
okay.
he is a training fool.
Right. He probably knows PATC as well.
Without a shadow of a doubt.
Very cool. I appreciate you coming on and speaking about the Wounded Blue and your experiences with PATC and that kind of stuff.
My pleasure.
It's awesome getting to talk to you again. We need to keep in touch, and I definitely want to help with working on getting in front of the right people to get this stuff pushed through. That's needed for sure. So with that being said, do you need to reach out? Do you want to talk to Randy or anybody else at the Wounded Blue? It's the woundedblue.org. I will link that as well in the comments section down below. With PATC, this is Behind the Badge Uncut. Share it, like it, send it out. Any sponsors that want to come on board or anything like that, you can also reach out in the comments, or you can send an email to behindthebadge@patc.com. And for all the officers out there, first responders, everybody stay safe. Serve with compassion.
One more thing.
Yes, sir.
One more thing. My new podcast, A Cop's Life.
Ah, right on.
You want it? There's nothing like this. A Cop's Life is one of the most. So one of my books was called A Cop's Life. Where is it? It's up there on the wall there. And I named this podcast after that because we talk about the heart that these officers have, and it's a very raw broadcast. So if you want to really hear the real stories, go to A Cop's Life. It's on all the platforms.
Oh, very cool. Right on. Yeah, definitely. I'll push that one out there as well. It sounds like a good time for sure. As said, Behind the Badge Uncut. I'm Mike Heisinger. Everybody stay safe, serve with compassion, and protect with a warrior spirit.